This coming week marks the 10th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, one of the most far-reaching pieces of civil rights legislation since the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Like the 64 Act, the ADA has been shaped and refined in the years since it passed by lawsuits. Joining us to talk about the ADA is Peter Blank. He is a law professor at the University of Iowa and director of the Law, Health, Policy, and Disability Center there. Welcome, Mr. Blank.
Thank you.
In the past decade, where has the ADA had the greatest impact?
The strongest impact, I believe, has been in attitudinal change. The world is a very different place today than it was 10 years ago. The unanswered question, of course, is who are people with disabilities? How do you measure a person with a disability for purposes of the law?
How do you define a person with disability?
Well, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, a person with a disability is someone who is substantially limited in a major life activity, or somebody who is regarded as having a disability. And of course, each of those words make lawyers salivate because they're paid to interpret words like what is a substantial limitation, what is a major life activity, and what is the perception of somebody with a disability. And these questions are being decided in the courts. For example, last term, the United States Supreme Court decided a trio of cases, the lead case called Sutton v. United Airlines, and the question before the court was, how can somebody who has an impairment that is mitigated, that is, they wear eyeglasses or they take psychotropic medication or they take insulin for their diabetes, how can somebody like that who works perfectly well in the everyday world still be a person with a disability for purposes of analysis under the ADA? And the Supreme Court decided that they could not be.
A good decision in your view?
I don't know that I would describe it as good or bad. It may be positive in the sense that it will be increasingly difficult for people who do not have disabilities that cannot be proved with some certainty to succeed under the law. And so perhaps in some perverse way it will reduce the backlash we hear in the press and elsewhere that somehow this law is being abused by people with so-called impairments that were not anticipated to be covered at the time the law was passed, such as the case of the kissing professor in Maine who had this unfortunate habit of coming on to his female students. And when he was taken to task for that behavior, he, of course, claimed that he was taking some sort of psychotropic medication that lessened his inhibitions, and therefore he was not responsible for his behavior under the ADA. And, of course, that case is a loser, and it was a loser in court. But those are the stories that are picked up by the press and elsewhere, which seem to suggest that this law is being taken advantage of.
But does the very fact that such cases can be brought and heard in a court of law suggest maybe that the act was written too broadly?
Part of the judicial pruning process is to perhaps make those sorts of determinations. In 1998, the first case brought before the United States Supreme Court involving the ADA involved a woman who had asymptomatic HIV disease, and the question was, could this individual be disabled for purposes of the law? And Justice Kennedy, writing for the majority, stated that from the moment of infection, regardless of the symptoms that are present, a person with HIV disease can be a person with a disability for purposes of the law.
Could someone who had poor hand-eye coordination, for instance, sue to get on the varsity basketball team under the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Well, that case is not too far off the point. There have been cases, for example, whether or not someone who has a heart condition could sue to get on the varsity basketball team. It happened to be a basketball player at Northwestern University in Chicago. And again, the question becomes, what are the essential functions of the job to be performed? And is that person being denied that opportunity on the basis of characteristics that really have nothing to do with his or her ability to perform the job, whether it's basketball or any other activity? As a result of the ADA, employers are now increasingly more carefully crafting the types of jobs and the descriptions of those jobs that people are doing in the workplace, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I should emphasize that this is not a preferential treatment law, And if an employee is not qualified to do the job, whether they have a disability or not, or as a matter of fact, if they're equally as qualified as a person without a disability, they are not required to be retained or hired by an employer.
At the same time, people, companies, states, have balked at paying the price. And there's a case before the U.S. Supreme Court, expected next term, that could roll all this back.
The case that's going to be argued before the Supreme Court this fall is a case called Garrett versus Alabama. And the central question is, to what extent are state employees covered by the ADA when they sue their state governments on the grounds of discrimination in the area of disability? It need not be a sweeping case in terms of being a death knell for the ADA or somehow questioning the constitutional parameters of the ADA, as some have suggested it might be. It does raise fundamental questions of federalism, and that is, how far can Congress go in crafting remedies that alleviate disability discrimination?
So it sounds as though 10 years after it was first enacted, the Americans with Disabilities Act still has a long ways to go before it's really sorted out and clear.
If you had asked me 10 years after the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed whether or not that law had solved all the problems of the day, you and I would both agree that we're a long way from that even still today. The fact of the matter is the ADA has been in effect for less than 10 years. It was passed in 1990 and it's been phased in over time. It's very much a work in progress, and I think it's a mistake to view the success of this law either solely in terms of litigation outcomes or in terms of accessible buildings or not. It really is a congressional statement reflective of a new way of thinking about impairment and disability, not just for people who are presently disabled, but for the one in four of us who will become disabled in the future, and for the baby boomer generation, really, of which I am one, whose numbers will far exceed when we get older, the numbers of people with disabilities right now.
Peter Blank is a law professor at the University of Iowa and the director of the Law, Health Policy, and Disability Center there. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.